This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Okay, good evening. So tonight's Parsha Shir, Parsha's Toldah, is a fascinating Sedra, lots and lots in the Sedra. Let's see how much we can get through of the handout. If you're listening online, please email me at j.golker@gmail.com. I'll send you the handout. Mitzvah Hashem. So the Parsha begins, Ve'ele Toldos Yitzchok ben Avraham, Avraham Holides Yitzchok. These are the generations of Yitzchok, Vahyitzchok ben Aboyim Shona, Bekachta is Rivka. He's 40 years old when he gets married to Rivka. And then we discover that Rivka is barren. Vayet HaYitzchok Lashem L'Noichach Ishtoi Ki Akorahi. And he prays, Vayet HaZ Lashon Tefillah, Yitzchok prays L'Noichach Ishtoi. Now what does that mean? L'Noichach Ishtoi. We are probably familiar with Rashi. Rashi says L'Noichach Ishtoi, L'Noichach means opposite. Ze Oimed B'Zov Yizu, or Mispalel, V'Zu Oimed B'Zov Yizu, Mispaleles. Yitzchok's in one corner, Rivka's in the other corner. They're opposite each other, and they're both davening. That's how Rashi learns. L'noichach, opposite. The Rashbam learns differently. The Rashbam learns, L'noichach, he says one word, Bishvil, which means, Vayet HaYitzchak L'Hashem, L'noichach Ishtoi, on behalf of his wife. He's davening for her. Now, there's a very interesting Meshech Chochma. Says the Meshech Chochma, Vayet HaYitzchak L'Hashem, L'noichach Ishtoi, Pirush Bishvil Ishtoi Rashbam. He's quoting our Rashbam, that L'noichach means on behalf of his wife, Rivka. Now, the obvious question is, why is he davening for her and not for himself? They've been married 20 years. Yitzchok is now 60 years old. Rivka is 23 years old. They have been married for 20 years, the way Rashi learns. And why is he davening for her and not for himself? Says the Meshech Chochma, Ki hu haya batuach sheyilo zera. He was confident that he would be blessed with children, and he wasn't the problem. Or k'moishin omar Hashem yisparach l'Avram, like Kodesh Baruch Hu says to Avram Avinu, v'karasa es shemo Yitzchok, v'hakimoisi es brisi itoi, l'zarei achrov. So in other words, I know there's going to be progeny going to come through Yitzchok, so therefore there's an assurance from Kodesh Baruch Hu that Yitzchok will have children. Therefore, if you like, he's not worried about himself. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has told him he's going to have children. Rak yitochen sheyerid meshacheres. But of course it could be that he'll have children through another wife. Lochein hispalel. But therefore he davened, like the Medrash says, shekom ha-sheyerid yeloi mitzadekes halos. But he wanted it to come from this tzadekes, from Rivka, and therefore he davens that Rivka should be the one who's going to be the mother of his children. Okay.
But if you daven for somebody else, you will answer
them. True, that is true. We discussed it recently, kol mevakesh rachem bat chaverah. Yes, we learned from last week, from a few weeks ago. Kol mispalel bat chaverah, mehunis ane tchila. He is answered first. True. I don't know if that is his strategy, but it seems to be the poshut pshat is, that according to the Meshech Chochma, that he is davening for her because he's confident about himself, because he's got a bracha, an assurance from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that he's going to have children. Now, Rav Yaakov Bender's got two lovely sfarim on Sedra, and he just makes an interesting observation. He says, you see, his tefillah worked, and Rivka gave birth, and really, Klal Yisrael are established through the tefillah of one Yid for another Yid, from one Jew for another Jew. That is the very roots of the Jewish people. We're established on the tefillah of one for another. You see from here the power, it's in our DNA, as it were. The ability, the importance of davening for another. And he makes an interesting point. I forget who he quoted, but he quoted an interesting thing. The Pesuk de Zimra, we say this halukah every morning. One of the halukas in davening, after Ashrei, before Yishtabach, halukah halinafshes Hashem. We're listing in here the whole litany of human suffering, things that we could be davening for. Al tiftachu ben divin. Don't put your confidence in princes, but ben adam she'en etchoy, in human beings that have no salvation. Ashrei she'el Yaakov be'ezrei. Praiseworthy is he whose help is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Sivrei, the God of Yaakov. Sivrei al Hashem el'okov, who his hope is in Hashem, his God. Oisem mishpat la'ashukim. He gives justice to the downtrodden. Noisin lechem l'ra'evim, bread to the hungry. Hashem matir asurim, he releases those who are bound, who are held hostage. Hashem pokeach ivrim, he opens the eyes of those who can't see. Hashem zokev kufufim, He straightens those who are bent over. Hashem oyev tzadikim. Hashem shomer es geirim, the geirim. Yosem va'almona. Yoidet, he encourages orphans, widows. V'derech rishoim ye'aves, etc., etc. Yimlech Hashem la'ilam. His point is that it's unlikely that a person is suffering from all of those things. But yet, we all davening sort of collectively. Tefillah is blosh and rabbin. So in our tefillah every morning in the Halleluka, we are referring to the whole range of human suffering, and therefore we are davening for other people. Our conclusion is Yimlech Hashem la'ilam void. That is our real refuge. That is our real hope. So you see that tefillah is all about davening for others, and that's why tefillah is indeed in the plural. We're davening refa'inu, etc., etc. He says a lovely anecdote. The Rnosan Svi Finkel, it was on Rosh Hashanah time, someone comes to him and says, Rosh Shiva, what should I be davening for? Rosh Hashanah. For Yirah Shamayim, for success in learning, for, you know, 1,000 things I can be davening for. What should I be davening for? And I remember Rnosan Svi had a debilitating Parkinson's disease. And for him, every word was very, very difficult. In response to this question, he just said two words. What should I be davening for? His response was, someone else. That's it. That wasn't on the list of potential questions that the fellow was asking. What should I be davening for? Someone else. Very beautiful idea. Okay, so that is the opening idea of the Neichach Ishtei that you see from the very outset, Klal Yisrael established through the tefillah of one Jew for another. That's the Meshech Chochmah. I can't mention this pasuk without mentioning another Meshech Chochmah. I try not to repeat. But for those with a good memory, in 2018, I mentioned this Meshech Chochmah, but it's on this pasuk, it's the Meshech Chochmah, so I couldn't hold back. Look at this Meshech Chochmah. Ki Akarahi. Yeah, this is amazing. Ki Akarahi. If you go look at the top box, because she is barren. Now, if you look at that word, Ki Akarahi, I'm at the top box, third line. Ki Akarahi, what's unusual about the word he? It's got a vav. You normally spell it hey yud aleph, but it's spelled hey vav aleph. Says the Meshech Chochmah. I'm now back in box two at the bottom there. Ki akara he bevavks it. How unusual! Listen to this. Val tzad haremez yesh lema. I can explain. It's hinting to something. It's alluding to something. Tehi hoy sebas gimel shonim. Do you remember she was 3 years old when she got married? Or ben aboyim bekachte es Rivka, and he was 40 years old when he married Rivka, or ben shishim shana beledes Esom. And we know that Yitzchok was 60 when he became a father, i.e. that's 20 years later. So how old was Rivka at this stage? 23. Hari hoisa bas chof gimel shana b'sheyolda. So she became a mother at 23 years old. Now, for the first 11 years of her life, biologically she wasn't able to have children. She was too young. So in reality, how long was she actually barren for? If she became a mother at 23, and for the first 11 years she couldn't physically become a mother, so she's barren for 12 years, 23 minus 11. Says the Meshech Chochmah, same as Yud Alef Shana She'eni Yoledes, referring to Gemara in Yevamos Yud Gimel, for the first 11 years she couldn't give birth, couldn't have children, and therefore you knock off that from the 23 years that she was. Vim Kain, Lo Yisur Akara, Rak Yud Beishonim. She was actually barren for 12 years. For he, spelt Hey Vov Aleph, Begematria Yud Beis. Is Gematria Yud Beis. So you see now the pasuk, Vayeta Yisrael Nechach Ishtai, Ki Akorohi, because she was barren, he, spelt with a Vov, she was barren for 12 years.
It's the first time it happened.
What? No, the truth is, Rashi... I don't know. Maybe they've done it before. I don't know. But either way, the reference, Ki Akorohi, is because she was barren. It's a funny thing. Why isn't it spelled with Yud? Says the Meshech Chochmah, Pi Aremez, is alluding to the fact that she was barren for 12 years. An astonishing Meshech Chochmah.
Are there a lot of E's that are spelled with the Vav? Ah! There's some Sidris.
Who are here? Yeah, I don't know. It's a good question, and I suppose each one deserves its own analysis, but it certainly works very well over here. Okay. Okay, let's press on. Seder. The mainstay, of course, of the parasha is the incident with the brachas with Yaakov and Esau. That Yitzchok is wanting to give brachas. he wants to give brachas for whatever reason to Esav. Rivka has alarm bells ringing. This is dangerous. This is the future of the Jewish people is at stake if Yaakov doesn't get the brachas. And he goes in al pi Rivka's instructions, which again al pi Ruach HaKodesh. And she goes and says to him that you've got to go and get the brachas. Now, we know that each of the Ovis have certain middos. Avraham is Chesed, Yitzchak is Gvura, Yaakov Avinu is Emes. It's articulated by Pesuk in Micha, Titen Emes LeYaakov, Chesed LeAvraham, etc. Hashem Nishbat LeAvraham MeKedem. Now, there's a Gemara at the end of Makkos. The Gemara says in the end of Makkos, it goes through a kapitel Tehillim, and it says that each phrase refers to a different thing. It says, he doesn't slander, he doesn't speak badly with his tongue. That is a reference to Yaakov Avinu. And then the Gemara wants to bring an incident to prove the honesty of Yaakov Avinu. Now, if you were writing the Gemara, you want to bring a proof for Yaakov Avinu's honesty, what incident in his life would you bring? I would imagine working for Lavan, right? And the Pasuk says, the bottom box, Zeli Esrim Shana Beveischa Vatatiha, I was working for Rachel, for Leah, for 20 years in total, Vatichalif Es Maskruti Aser Es Moinim, and you changed my contract tens of times to work with a crook, with a dishonest person for 20 years, and to maintain your honesty, and not to sort of be influenced by him, and to maintain your very lofty standards, that's pretty impressive. That would be a good example. What would be the one thing you wouldn't put? The one thing I wouldn't put is pretending to be Esav. I mean, that's the one point where, you know, however you want to explain it, it wasn't at the height of honesty, lechora. And yet, if you look at the next page, lo ragal al lashonai, it's a more makas chaftalad, lo ragal al lashonai, he has no slander on his tongue, ze Yaakov Avinu. Tichsiv, as it says, and here comes the proof that Yaakov is so honest. Ula yomusheni avi vayisi be'enov kmisateya. Maybe my father will touch me, and I'll be like a deceiver in his eyes. Of all the psukim, you're going to bring this incident? How bizarre! That's the Gemara at the end of Makkos, the last Amud in Makkos. Now, different explanations to answer this. One is the famous zavot of the Vilna Gaon. Ulai. What's the difference between ulai and pen? You know, we translate them both as perhaps, but what about pen? Lest, what is the difference? So the Vilna Gaon says, pen is when you don't want it to happen. Ulai is when you do want it to happen. That's the right. Like ulai is a halavai. Halavai should happen. The difficulty is, it doesn't fit in over here. Ulai yimusheni avi. It should be pen. Pen yimusheni avi. Says the Vilna Gaon, no, it fits in very well. Because ulai yimusheni avi, halavai, my father should touch me and realize that I'm not Esav, and my secret will be out. So he's so honest, he doesn't want to go through with it. That's one pshat. Okay. The Rivan, who Rashi stops writing in the end of Gemara Makkos, around in the third parak, around Daf Yotes, I think, Rashi stops being Rashi. He didn't edit it in the normal times, the normal number of times. And the Rivon takes over. I think the Rivon is his son-in-law. So the Rivon says, Lo rogel al shonai, lo yrotza l'shakem itchila. He didn't want to lie. She'oma ulai m'sheni avi, ela she'imo hichrichosai. His mother forced him to do this. Val pi hadibur, and it's based on the Ruach HaKodesh, t'chsiv olai k'laticha b'ni. Maybe on me the curse will be. It was said to me in Nevuah, you have to go in. So you see that Rivka was told al pi Ruach HaKodesh that she has to get Yaakov to go in and do this. Fine. Now, Rashi famously says, when he goes in, when Yaakov Avinu goes in, he says, Anoichi Esav b'chayrecha. But if you're a good Balkura, you're going to read it, Anoichi, pause, Esav v'charecha. Why would the good Balkara do that? Because that's how Rashi learns what happens. Anoichi, says Rashi, Anoichi, I am the person who's bringing you this. V'esav v'charecha. There's a slight pause. Osisi, I did. Kama dvarim kasha dibaratu. I've done lots of things. That's not lying. And later on in the pasuk it says, V'yomer ani, He just said, I. So you see that Yaakov throughout this episode tried his very utmost to minimize the blatant lies. He tried to stick to the truth as much as he possibly could. Now that's very interesting. Why? Because generally speaking, when you have a person who sort of excels in a certain middah, you can question, does that person have a natural predisposition to this middah? He happens to be particularly honest, he's a big Baal Chesed, he was born that way, that's his nature? Or is it something that it's an acquired growth-based trait that he's developed and worked on? It's hard to know. So how can you tell? So for example, Avraham Avinu, his middah was Chesed. So is that something which was like I said, a natural predisposition? Or is it something which he could turn it off? And it's not a natural thing, that it's actually something he's worked on. But if he could sort of switch it off, then maybe he's in control of his chesed. So how can you tell? So the answer is, you give Avraham Avinu an akedah moment. If his natural predisposition is chesed, he will find that very, very challenging. He won't be able to do it. But if it's something which is a sort of a growth-based trait that he has acquired, then I'm in control of it. And if the appropriate thing to do here is to do the Akedah, then I can be in control of it. Well, so too with Emes. Yaakov Avinu, is it something he's just so honest, he's just born like that? Or is it something he can control? What's the nafka mina? When you've got the green light to lie, because your mother told you, Piruach HaKodesh, you've got to now be Esav, so you can get quite carried away with this. I can actually, say the sheker, say that I can move away from the MS, and it's open season. But the very fact that Yaakov Avinu was able to retain as much honesty as he possibly could, that shows this is something that he was in total control of, and rather it was an acquired growth-based trait that he was in control of. So therefore, on the contrary, this is a very beautiful example of Yaakov Avinu's absolute emes. Because in the very situation where he could just be, sort of the green light is given not to be honest, he still maintains high levels of honesty by trying to minimize the actual sort of blatant untruths that he was required to say. So you see that this actually is a very good example of his clinging to the middah of emes. Now, more than that, I saw the following. This I saw in Rabbi Franz Sefer, the Parsha Vat, I think it's called. He says a very geshmak Vat from, I think it's the Rosh Shiva of Baltimore many years ago, with someone called Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Kulevsky. There's an art scroll biography of him. It's a very good biography. But he says the following Vat. In that Gemara in Makkos, the next, he goes through a kapitel Tehillim, and at first of all, it says Lo Rogal L'Shoyna Ze Yaakov Avinu, and then the chapitel continues and says V'Doyve Emes Bilvavoy, someone who speaks truth in his heart. Who is that? Kogoyin Rav Safra. Rav Safra. What's that about? So the Rivon again is the main commentary over there in Makkos at the end. The Gemara tells us the background. Rav Safra. What was Rav Safra's Doyve Emes Bilvavoy? So he quotes the Shiltas to Rav Acha, and he says over here in the box, in the middle box, V'hochi hava uvda de Rav Safra. The following was the incident of Rav Safra. Hoy loy chepetz echod. Rav Safra had a certain item, limkar, to sell. Uba adam echod lefonov. And someone came to buy this item from him. B'shar shahu kore krishma. Rav Safra was saying krishma. V'omar loy, ten li hachepetz, give me the chepetz. B'kach v'kach domin. So the buyer said to Rav Safra, I want to buy this item for such and such an amount of money. V'lo onohu, he couldn't respond because he was in the middle of Krishma. Kosovo, the buyer, the potential buyer, thought, maybe the seller is not interested at selling at this price. He increased the price that he offered. By the time he finished Krishma, who knows, by then the offer price may have doubled or tripled. Rav Safra said to him, look, I'm selling it to you for the original price that you offered. Because that amount of money I had in my mind, I'll accept that. You increased it, but I'd already made up my mind to sell it to you for that. Now that's very honest, because no one knew that. He could easily have said, I'll sell it to you for your final price, but he didn't. So you see that Reb Safra is v'dover emes bilvavoi, he was honest, even in his thoughts, he stuck to that. Beautiful. So Reb Safra is a paradigm of truth, v'dover emes bilvavoi. Now, that has to be read together with the Gemara in Chulin. The Gemara in Chulin, Daf Sadi Dalad Amud Beis, says this, Mazutra b'reidzer of Nachman hava ka'ozel misichri l'bei mechuzah. Mazutra, the son of Rav Nachman, was once traveling from Sichra to Bei Mechuzah, from one place A to place B. V'rova v'Rav Safra hava ka'ozel Sichra, and Rav and Rav Safra were going the other way. Pogu ba'adodi. So they met on the way. Rav and Rav Safra were walking one way, and Mazutra was walking the other way. Hu sovar la'apei hu dekaosu. Mazutra thought, wow, they're coming to greet me. They've come all the way to meet me. Omer lahu, lomel rabbonu de Torah chosu kulahai. Wow, why are you matrich yourselves to come and meet me? It's so nice of you. Thank you for this huge tircha that you've come all the way to meet me. Omer lir Safra. So Rav Safra, who one of the two rabbonim, him and Rava, were walking. This is Rav Safra of Dover Emes Bilvavoi. Rav Safra says, no. Anan lo have yodin in dekasima. He was being super honest. He was saying, we actually had no idea you were coming, but we were just heading this way. But then he adds, very politely, I have yadainon, had we known you were coming, tfei have tarchinon, we would have been even much yochasals more, had we known you were coming, etc., etc. Later on, I guess, Rava said to Rav Safra, my time is omer slehachi. Well, why did you say that? I mean, you've upset him. If you wouldn't have said anything, he would have come along and he said, whoa, thank you for coming to greet me. He didn't know that you weren't coming to greet him. So you just said, thank you. Yeah, pleasure. You know, we're happy to greet you. You're worth it. Well, whatever you would have said. Why did he have to be so honest to sort of deflate him? Says the Gemara, but we would have lied to him. So you see, the Gemara seems to side with Rava. You know, it's just you shouldn't have said that to him. The Shiltas praises Rav Safra for being so honest. That's the first case in the Gemara in Marcus. But Rava comes along and he teaches Rav Safra that sometimes your truth needs to be tempered. So you see, just as a continuation from that, that sometimes truth has got to be seen in the bigger picture. Sometimes being too truthful is offensive. And therefore it needs to be tempered somewhat. Interestingly, that's what the Gemara, the Pasuk says in Tehillim. This Pasuk, it comes from the Perek Tesvav, Kapitel Tesvav in Tehillim. V'dover emes bilvavoi, loy oso lerehu ra. But make sure you don't cause a ra to your friend. You can be truthful, but just use chachma as well. So you see that even Rav Safra, who is again the paragon of honesty and truthfulness, of dover emes bilvavoi, rightly so, according to Gemara in Makkos, but still Rava had to teach him that sometimes truth needs to be tempered. So just an interesting aside on that capital. Okay, let me just finish with the following interesting idea. Now this, apologies if you've read the Tribune, but I mentioned this article, this story there. It's a remarkable story, and I think it sort of brings out an important point on the parasha. In life, we have Nisyonis daily. Yeah, check out the first perek of Masilas Yesharim. Life is one continuous battle of constant moral choices many times a day, constantly, and that's really what Olam Hazeh is all about. But sometimes we have, I like to call them our Arkada moments, the big ones, the big Nisyonis that come our way. For Avraham Avinu, it was, of course, the 10th and final test, it was the Arkada. For Yaakov Avinu, this week's Parsha was his big test. Would he be able to sort of compromise the truth and listen to his mother? So much was at stake, or would he not stand up to that? That was his Arkada moment, as it were. So I was listening to the JLU History for the Curious, right? Aubrey Hirsch's podcast, fantastic podcast. So the latest one, he's got a series of three on Yishmael. So the third one, they interviewed Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson. So he tells, so it's a fabulous interview. He's phenomenal. And he tells a story about someone called Menachem Mendel Futterfuss. Now, I've mentioned him before. I mentioned a couple of stories about him in the past. But he tells several stories about him. And I looked him up a little bit more to find out a bit more about him. But either way, Rabbi Jacobson tells the following story, which I think brings out this point. So Menachem Mendel Futterfuss is a legendary figure in the world of Chabad. He was what's known as a mashpia, which is like a mashkiach, sort of an inspirational personality in his world. And he suffered terribly in the, soon after the second, during the Second World War and afterwards. He was sent to the Siberia and he suffered 8 years in the Gulag. And he has many interesting experiences and stories there, which he would often fabreng with his Talmidim and tell the Talmidim about later on. He actually came to London. He was in 8 years. He was released in 1963, and he came to London. He actually had a very difficult life. His name was Menachem Mendel, Ben Menachem Mendel. His father died before he had his bris. And he came to London. He lost a daughter in a car crash. Anyway, because when he went to America, then he was in Eretz Yisrael, in Kfar Chabad. So he would fabreng with the boys and he would tell them stories. And one time he told them the following story of his experiences in the Gulag. He was very respected amongst his, people he rubbed shoulders with, Russian peasants and criminals and all different types of people. One time, a Russian peasant confided in him. People confided in him because they realized he was different. He was a Rav, he was Hasidic, he was a man of principle, he wouldn't eat treif, he wouldn't work on Shabbos. So they trusted him. So one time the Russian peasant came over to him and said he's planning on escaping that night. So Futufas said to him, how are you going to get out? The guards here 24 hours. You're never going to get away. So he says, no, I've noticed that when there's a change in the shift, when one shift finishes and another one comes, I've got a window of 20 seconds. I'm going to run through the forest. There's a blind spot and I'm going to just run then. So Mendel Futufas said to him, but the bullets might not be able to reach you, but the dogs will reach you. They've got these two wild dogs. They're ferocious. They'll tear you to shreds. So he said, I've got a plan. Okay. So that night, Mendel Futufas was working and he just with half an eye, he was like watching like nervously what's going to happen. And sure enough, there's a change of the guard. And this guy suddenly runs, and as fast as he can, he runs into the forest. After about a minute, they notice. They send the dogs out. And the dogs come hurtling towards him at breakneck speeds, ferociously. And when they catch up with him, this Russian prisoner had taken a chunk of meat, and he throws it down and continues running. And thankfully, the dogs stop, and they just eat the meat. A few minutes later, the dogs come back to the camp with lots of meat in their mouth. And the chief guard sees what's happened. They've lost their prisoner. He takes a gun and he shoots both dogs dead. And Remendel's thinking to himself, why did he do that? Why did he shoot these dogs? These are expensive dogs. They've been trained for years. Okay, they messed up just now, but they're good dogs. You can't ask the guard. But a few weeks later, he had the opportunity. He caught the guard at a good moment. And he said to him, a few weeks ago, I noticed that incident, you shot the dogs. Why did you shoot the dogs? So the guard said the following. He said, you've got to understand, these dogs have been trained for this moment for their whole lives. This prison break is really what they've been trained for years. This is their big moment. And they blew it. They went for a piece of meat. They were distracted by a piece of meat instead of doing what they should be doing. If they mess up at this point, waste of time. They failed. We don't need them. And that's why I shot them. So Mendel fabrenged with the boys and he said to the boys, that's a powerful lesson. He says, in a way, life is one long training school for your Akedah moment. And make sure when that moment comes, do not be distracted by a piece of meat or anything else. That's his point. And that's really what Yaakov Avinu is going through in this week's Edra. Avram goes through in Parshas Vayera. It's not to be distracted at that pivotal moment. So what have we said this evening? A few ideas. Number one, the Neichach Ishtei. Rashi says opposite. The Rashbam says on behalf of the Meshech Chochma says that you see that Klal Yisrael is established through Yitzchak davening for Rivka, for one Jew davening for another. That's who we really are. The importance of davening for another. What should I daven for? They said to Ross and Svi. Someone else, he said. Rivka is barren, ki akora he, because she was barren for 12 years, as we described. That's pshat, why he is spelt unusually with a hey, a vav, and an aleph. And then Yaakov's test, which incident in Yaakov's life demonstrates this trait? I would have said the last thing is this incident over here in this week's parasha, but yet, you see on the contrary, that this is a situation when he could have sort of had the open season to say lies, he still restrained himself and he limited the untruths that he had to say. And then that tempering the truth, that whilst the Shilters praise Rav Safra for being so honest, Rava, however, taught Rav Safra that sometimes truth needs to be tempered. And then that last idea that we all have tests in lives, but really life is one big training school for the big moments, and we shouldn't be distracted at that fateful moment. Okay, good night.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.